this NPR station.
And you're listening to WMNF Tampa, Sarasota, Clearwater Community Conscious Radio. Hi, I'm Mary Glennie.
And I'm Arlene Engelhardt. And we're here in the studio also with Lisa Perry, who will be joining us in the second half of the show. And we're so glad to have her here. We also hope you're all recovering a bit from the election, but we still have a lot of work to do. And so what else can I say? But my sympathies and my concerns go out to RBG.
I was going to say, we need to send out all kinds of healing mantra for RBG. That woman needs to live to be 200.
Yes.
And she's got to increase her push-ups to, what does she do, 100 a day? Maybe
I think she does 20 a day, but still, that's amazing. And she,
well,
are there full push-ups on the floor?
Yeah, and I think she broke ribs, not a hip. I don't think I heard that.
Yeah.
Not that that is a death sentence as it used to be, thank heavens. Medicine has improved a lot. But still, we need her alive and well and doing her thing on the Supreme Court. And Lisa Perry, thanks so much for coming in. I know with this whole election season, it has been tiring for everybody. And Florida, you know, I mean, it has a ways to go. Women actually did really well. And, you know, you've been involved with the Women's March so much. And to me, this is an extension of the Women's March. And if not very long, we're going to be talking to Leah Greenberg, one of the founders of Indivisible. And to me, all of those merged. And I think that's why you saw now in the women, you know, over 100 women are going to be in Congress. So this is a big deal. Are you on?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. You go
okay.
Right ahead.
Yes, I would second that. And I think that there are a lot of people that are working really hard throughout Florida right now to deal with our election. But nationwide, women have really come and risen up. And I do think that that is because of our efforts here. And seeing also communities of color going to the House of Representatives is really incredible as well.
Oh, absolutely. Native Americans, Muslim women, Presley, and first African American woman from Massachusetts, and women governors. This is also huge, you know, that they're governors, they've gone into state legislatures. And again, I think one looks back to that day after the inauguration and the millions of women in this country here, what, there were 26 or 27,000 that marched right here in this Pinellas, Tampa area, and throughout the world. It wasn't just a United States event. And I think, you know, we're seeing the fruition of that right now.
Absolutely.
And so it's really exciting, even though Florida has, I think, a very long ways to go.
And there are volunteers needed to help with getting information for the recount. I'll get that information on the site, or maybe you know it, Lisa.
I know that right now we are looking for volunteers in Pinellas County to drive people. We're looking for drivers and notaries to help with people who cast a provisional ballot. So we are going to their addresses, finding them, and trying to get them to sign affidavits that they did cast a provisional ballot. And I have the address for that is 5100 First Ave North in St. Petersburg, Florida.
And there's a site in Tampa, too, and they're making phone calls to try to locate the people first.
Correct.
And so I'll look that up again and give that address later, too. But the deadline is 5 o'clock today, 5 p.m.
And Lisa, did you tell me yesterday when I was talking to you that it's 80,000 calls that have to be made by 5 p.m.?
Yes, it was 80,000 calls that had to be made by 5 p.m. today. And actually, they've had such a surge of volunteers that they're no longer looking for people that need to make the calls.
Wow.
We've had so many people show up in support to help. So now, at least in Tampa Bay, we don't need the calls made, but we really need to get drivers to people's houses to get them to sign the affidavit for the provisional ballot. Or if you cast a provisional ballot, please go to the supervisor of elections. And also, if you're a notary or a driver, please show up at the 5100 First Ave North in Pinellas, and we'll get the Hillsborough address shortly.
And, you know, here again, I think women are going to be so important. I really do, because, you know, particularly in this state, people put their hearts and souls into a campaign where you really saw, you know, options. And I think with politics, it's always good to see options. And particularly with women, we have had so many instances when we've come up just a little bit short. And it's really hard that, you know, you kind of assess what you've done or didn't do. And it's really hard not to really look and say, well, look at this. You know, this was a huge improvement for where it's been. And so it's always hard to realize that you have to not only get that energy, but go down deep and then kind of, you don't start anew, but you realize, okay, this is the goal. And at least one of my real goals for this state, Medicaid expansion. And to me, it's heartbreaking. I mean, really, that healthcare is being used as such a political football in this state. And that's a big one. And so, you know, for every one of you out there, if you're disappointed now and you're feeling really pretty sad, what are the goals that you really want? And just because you might not have gotten it this time, how do you go forward to change it so you will accomplish it? Because if one thing, and when we talk to Leah Greenberg in a few minutes, I'm sure she's going to say that they learned a lot from the Tea Party. And the Tea Party did it at the grassroots level. I mean, yes, it was a pretty negative connotation. They wanted to make politicians say no, no, no all the time. And I'm really upset with all this regressive aspects of no, as opposed to we need to do this, this, and this. And let's work it out if there are differences. But you can learn a lot. And it's on the ground. And it's knocking on people's doors. And it's not that social media isn't important. It is. It's very important. And it's a network. And people be foolish not to use it. But it's not quite the same. And I was listening to Underwood, the woman from Illinois that's going to the Congress now. And I'm not, that was kind of close to my home area in Illinois, you know, that whole Naperville, Aurora, that whole huge area with such a conglomeration of farms and industry and more or less middle class people.
And now Chicago suburb.
Yeah, well, actually, where I used to live is almost a Chicago suburb now. It stuns me that people do those kind of commutes to Chicago every day, you know, because they don't have rail anymore there. They have a little more, actually, in the city, but not from where I was then. But anyway, yeah, I mean, things have changed. But and that's what did it. And, you know, being a nurse and with that fabulous smile and really a real sincere in person, and it is healthcare.
And we do have, that's what one thing that we should feel good about, and thanks to all of you and those of us in this studio for the work that we've done to work on the election. We did turn the House, and that means that we no longer have a government that's controlled by a single party in all branches. So that's a very important first step.
Excuse me, Arlene, I'm looking at the time.
I know. I want to just say one more thing. Is your unwanted car just creating stress? Donate to WMNF, and it will create more support for the last local radio station in Tampa Bay. Call 1-888-966-3885 or visit WMNF.org to schedule your free and convenient pickup today.
Poor old Bess needs a new home, and WMNF will welcome her in. Okay, I'm going to put this music on, and then we're going to make the contact with Leah Greenberg.
Everybody let's sing, sing, sing. Everybody let's Now when the people shout, you got
I am going to pod this down because I am really excited. With us on the phone right now is Leah Greenberg, and she actually with her husband, Ezra Levin, were two of the founders of Indivisible. To me, a very, very important, you might say, grassroots organization that I think has been so important in some of the results of this election. So, Leah Greenberg, welcome so much to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, you know, I remember, because I was covering it here on this show, when you people started, and I right away downloaded your manual, and I thought, I just thought that was the most fabulous idea, and, you know, that when watched and you saw what happened with the Democrats, and they kind of were losing their contact with people on the ground, so I think that's really inspiring. So talk us through 2016. I think it's, what, around the Thanksgiving break, and you and your husband and other people were feeling pretty discouraged because what happened in this country, frankly, was a real challenge to a lot of progressive liberal ideas, you might say. So tell us, walk us through how Indivisible formed.
Absolutely. So I'm a former congressional staffer. My husband is as well. We worked in the on Capitol Hill during the early Obama years, and we had seen the rise of this powerful grassroots movement, the Tea Party, in opposition to us. And that was obviously a pretty rough time for us. Had to deal with a lot of really organized opposition, and it was difficult. And in the immediate aftermath of 2016, we sort of went back to that time in our minds and thought, you know, what could we do if we were actually taking the models and the lessons of that organized grassroots resistance and putting them into action now at a moment when we've lost control of Congress and the presidency? And so we were seeing this wave of energy, enthusiasm, a lot of people really looking for how they could get involved, a lot of people deeply disturbed by Trump. And we thought we could reverse engineer these lessons, we could put it out into the world as a guide, and we could maybe help some of those folks who were trying to organize figure out how they could be most impactful. So we wrote this guide. It was basically just lessons on how to make your elected officials listen to you. The basic frame was nothing that happens in the next 4 years depends on Donald Trump alone. It depends on whether your member of Congress is going along with him or whether they're resisting him. And you have powerful tools as a constituent to make them resist. And so here's how to do that. So put that guide out into the world. And then suddenly we found ourselves in touch with thousands of people around the country who were forming local groups to organize to put the guide into action.
And Leah, tell me, were you surprised? Because I was a little surprised because that spread like wildfire. I mean, really, all of a sudden, you know, that boom, there were Indivisible groups that were forming here. And boy, I was following and I still get your regular announcements. And it was 1,000 and 2,000. And now I think you're up to 5,000 or 6,000 different Indivisible groups throughout this country, every congressional district. And you really hit a nerve. And so I'm really curious because both you and your husband were on the staff of representatives of Congress. And did you find, and you know, you obviously have very progressive ideas, and did you find in your role on the staff, was there a disconnect with what you were happening in Washington with what was happening, say, on their home bases? Did you find a disconnect that when you watched what the Tea Party was doing, that you thought, wait a minute, this is something that's happening here that we need to address? Tell me, did you find a disconnect when you were actually on the staff there?
Well, I think there's always a disconnect. I mean, the Capitol Hill is a weird place. It's full of elected officials, and they're many of them are really, you know, they're people who care very deeply about their ideals and want to put them into action, but also know that in order to do that, they have to keep getting reelected every 2 years. And so they are constantly focused on their next election, on their image, on how they're perceived within their district, et cetera. And their staff, Capitol Hill is full of, you know, people who are like 21 to 30. It's a hard job. It burns people out. It's not well paid, so they leave pretty quickly. Young people, mostly well off, like disproportionately white, just because it's very hard to get those jobs if you aren't able to work for free for a period of time before. So it is not a place that looks a lot like the rest of America, which means that it's inherently somewhat difficult to really be sure that you're getting and fully understanding the concerns of your district. And so, for example, I represented, when I was on the Hill, I worked for the 5th District of Virginia, which is Charlottesville down to the North Carolina border. And the district had between a 10 and 20% unemployment rate during the time I was there. There was an enormous amount of economic pain going on. there were, we would field calls from people who were getting foreclosed on every day. And, you know, it was really striking that Capitol Hill is not full of the kind of people who are feeling the kind of economic pain that we were hearing from our district.
You know, Presley, the first African-American woman from Massachusetts, I was looking at some of her campaign videos, and I thought one of the most impressive lines she had, because she's representing a pretty poor district, that she said, those who are closest to the pain should be closest to the power. And I thought that was just an absolutely fabulous comment.
It is so true and so important. It is such a fundamentally important thing that in a representative democracy, we need the folks who are at the table to actually look like us, to have had the experiences of the American people. It is so enormously important.
Well, and in this recent elections, you know, I could see the effects of kind of the civic training, if you will, because I felt that was one of the most valuable things about Indivisible. Literally, your how-to manual really tells you how to talk to your congressman, how to call, what the things you should focus on, you know, that you're much better with just one idea as opposed to a whole smattering of ideas. And to me, that was kind of the civic training that an awful lot of Americans needed, because I saw you, and at the very same time, day after the inauguration, you had the Women's March, and right here, and Lisa Perry is right here with us right now, and she was a member, she was certainly with the Women's March. I don't know if, Lisa, were you ever with the Indivisible, too?
The Indivisible groups that have formed here as alongside with the Women's March, we've kind of merged as one, so we absolutely follow the Indivisible guide, and yeah, rock and roll, so thank you so much.
And to me, that's what's really happened, because you saw those millions of women, and we had 27,000 here in our area, you know, march. And when you look at the results, they're definitely, you saw some of those same women that were in those marches, either in D.C. or in their home areas, and you also saw them part of Indivisible, and they were the ones that thought, hey, you know, this guy ran for president, and look what he has done already. And so I saw in the women's wave, because frankly, the taking over by the Democrats of the House, they can really thank, to me, the women's wave that came out of those aspects of the Women's March, Indivisible, and they had all that underground training, so to speak, and at least I felt that I really saw that kind of civic, at the base roots level, energy manifested in the results so far of this midterm election. Did you?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Look, between 75% and 80% of our group leaders are women. Overwhelmingly, the folks who've been showing up and doing the work of the last 2 years to really, you know, first the protests and the advocating for their representatives, and then the grassroots organizing and the campaign volunteering and the running for office themselves, really disproportionate surge of women who are doing that work. And I think, you know, we're seeing that in the women who are powering the movements and the women who are very excitingly taking office this year, next year.
Yeah, and you know, in a way, Indivisible has worked the way a lot of women work. They tend to be a little more collegial. In other words, you don't have so much. I mean, of course, you have some great leaders, et cetera. But more often than not, at least on the baseline with Indivisible, it's what the real interests are right there in that area, and they're going to be different with different areas, and they're going to have different takes on it. And so they kind of talk it out and work it through, and so it's less centered in one person or one idea. And more, to me, of kind of the democratic process of, you know, how do we go forward in these important issues? And I'm hoping that women will bring that same aspect of kind of leadership to Congress that they have demonstrated, I think, coming out of those grassroots circles, so to speak. Do you find that to be the case?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, women are more likely to bring social networks to their work. They're more likely to, you know, be coming to their work with a lens that is really extending sort of beyond the traditional things that we think of as women's issues, reproductive health and reproductive justice, but more broadly to a set of values about belonging, about inclusion, about what it means to be American, to what we're seeing really across the movement is folks adopting a much more intersectional lens. So, for example, showing up on issues like family separation and Release for Dreamers. What we're seeing is a really powerful sort of orientation that is coming from women who understand this to be just a fundamental threat to their identities as women, but also just the fundamental values that the country was built on.
And in Divisible, and again, we're talking to Leah Greenberg, and she is one of the co-founders with her husband, Ezra Levin, of Indivisible, the movement that, to me, has really brought and trained, not trained, but get facilitated the training of people to be really their civic responsibilities. And right up to the date, whether you wanted to be or not, and I'm sure you did want to be, you've been right in the thick of all of the issues that have been evolving through these last 2 years, and right up to the day, and just yesterday, Trump hit the ground running, fires Sessions, and as I understand it, Indivisible is also with many other organizations that there's going to be protests. I know there are protests right here in this area, I think at 5 or 5:30 today. And tell us about that. And also, what threats do you see to the Mueller probe? And do you think with the new Democratic-controlled Congress, will they get sworn in time to try and give some protections to Mueller?
Absolutely. Well, so first of all, I think what's important to understand here is while Jeff Sessions is a really deeply dangerous figure in his own right, the firing of Jeff Sessions and his replacement with somebody who is clearly a Republican hack, who is on the record with his thoughts on how to undermine the Mueller investigation, is a clear red line. It's the equivalent of the Saturday Night Massacre for the Nixon administration. And so this is an absolutely critical moment for everyone who is concerned about the integrity of that investigation to mobilize, to make clear that we expect it to remain impartial, that we expect this man Whitaker to recuse himself, and that we expect Democrats to make sure that they are holding this administration accountable, that they are opening investigations themselves. So that's what's happening today at 5 p.m. around the country. There are folks mobilizing spontaneously in every state. You can go to TrumpIsNotAboveTheLaw.org to find your local event, and there should be something near you because there are hundreds of events that are confirmed across the country. And I think that going forward, what we're going to need to see is the Democratic House using its newfound majority power to actually hold this administration accountable and to shine a light on all of the dark things that it has been doing.
And tell me, Leah Greenberg, because to me, I think this is a very critical time in our American democracy. When Trump announced that, you know, he was going to change by a stroke of the pen, citizenship requirements, et cetera, and we're watching so many things. And literally, I think it never before in my lifetime, if I felt literally the very basics of the Constitution are really being challenged. And I also have realized that actually those who have really are kind of usurping this power in this country, they to me are really almost a dark force, that they not only want to control and own some of the politicians, but they want to change the rules. And so I've never seen such an important time for citizens to really become aware of what the Constitution is, what a sense of democracy is. And tell me, with your work with all these groups throughout the country, do you find that people are aware and are worried about the threats that we're kind of seeing to our democracy?
Absolutely. And I think that's a fundamental reason why a lot of our folks got active in the first place. There was this sense heading into 2016 that something about our existing system, our institutions, our parties, the elites, the media, whatever, would prevent the election of such an obviously unsuitable racist demagogue to sexual culture to office. That didn't happen. And that means that there are fundamental and deeper problems. It's not about Trump. He's a symptom of the problem. A healthy democratic system would have rejected Trump the way that a healthy body rejects the virus. And so you've got to actually get to what is the virus and how do we fix it? And that involves a full-scale reinvestment in democracy. That involves making sure that everyone can vote, recognizing that their Republicans have strategically used disenfranchisement and locking out communities of color consistently over the last few years as a way to entrench their own power. It means taking on gerrymandering and politicians choosing their own voters. It means investing in real protections on corruption and ethics reform. It means looking at campaign finance and who's funding our elections. All of the above, we've got to take all these problems on if we're going to get to the place where our democracy actually represents us.
And I'm curious, because you are so aware of some of the things that are really happening. People at the local level, many times they're also, you know, working hard, they've got families, et cetera. How, in other words, it's kind of hard for the citizens to really become totally informed and to the depth they need. And so tell me, how does that work out, that you obviously haven't, you really see things from a very broad perspective, you're going to have ideas, et cetera, but you very much follow what the people at the grassroots want and need. So how do you kind of intersperse that with the bigger overall vision, so to speak? And not that at the local level there aren't the visions too, but you almost need to keep both in mind. And how do you work that out?
It's a great question. I think that for us, the secret is really that we believe that power is built on the local level, and that we are part of a network. And fundamentally, the work and the leadership is coming from local leaders around the country. And so what we're trying to do always is be, a demystifying force, helping people understand what's going on in Congress, making sure that we're providing a platform and a coordinating base for action so that we can make our voices heard on the national level in a unified way, for example, with these protests that are coming up today. But also really embracing the, let a thousand flowers bloom approach, embracing the fact that on a local level, you're going to have a lot of different priorities and a lot of different ways that you can have an impact. And we think that's great. We want people to be figuring out what is the most exciting, what is the most important thing they can be doing in their community, in their state, and building civic power and building engagement around that.
And real quickly, Leah Greenberg, because I know your time is really constrained, we just heard about RBG taking a fall last night and breaking some ribs, et cetera. And I don't know about you, but I am very troubled with the packing of the Supreme Court right now with a very definite federalist, right-wing, very extreme ideology. Does this bother you, and how do you think we should address that?
Well, absolutely. I mean, obviously, just any news about her health is deeply concerning, and she's in our thoughts today. And I think fundamentally we have to look at what the Republicans have done in a historical perspective, which is that they've had a long-term strategy to take control of the court for the Federalist Society and to use it to roll back the Democratic agenda, roll back rights, civil rights, roll back economic entitlements, all of the above. And I think we have to be clear-eyed about the fact that they've understood the court as a source of political power for a long time in the way that we haven't. And so that could take a lot of different directions. It could take looking at, why we have the number of justices that we currently have. Why are there terms for life as opposed to limited in a normal, reasonable way? There are a lot of different things that we have to take on. Fundamentally, we have taken a real hit this election because the Senate is going to remain in Republican control, and that means that they're going to continue moving justices forward, not just on the Supreme Court level, but across the federal judiciary, and that is going to be something that we are dealing with for decades to come.
Yeah, and with the demonstrations today, I mean, with the firing of Jeff Sessions and perhaps the threat to Mueller, and knowing full well that Kavanaugh is on the court because he believes in supporting an imperial presidency, to just use a phrase that kind of covers it, and also the gap we have right now between the election and when those new House members are sworn in, to me, this is a very perilous time right now in this country, and people really have to be on high alert, don't you think?
Yes, absolutely. Look, I think this is a particularly dangerous time because Trump has just been rebuked by the American public. You could tell from his press conference yesterday, he knows perfectly well that he lost on Tuesday, and he knows that his powers are about to be more limited in just a couple of months, and so he is a wounded animal, and he is lashing out, and so we just have to be very alert. We have to be very... I know we're all tired because I think a lot of us have been working hard on this election for a long time, but we have to be ready for anything for the next couple of months.
And I'm looking at the clock, and you have very graciously given us more time than I know you have. And so was there any area, Leah Greenberg, that you want to cover that we didn't mention?
No, I think this is great. Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you for what you have done. I can't imagine where we would be right now if the Women's March and Indivisible didn't really, were the kind of grassroots forces that really, I think, propelled the possibilities to retake the Democratic Congress. And I thank you very, very much. Keep up the good work. Take all your vitamins. Get your rest because we need you. Oh, and Lisa Perry, because I know you've been such a big fan, was there anything you wanted to say before I let Leah go?
I just want to say thank you. You've inspired us all, and with your leadership, we've been able to really move people in Florida and keep doing what you're doing, and we will keep standing with you.
Arlene, did you want to say something quickly?
I was just going to say that you've mentioned it several times, but Leah Greenberg, would you like to give a website for people to go to?
Oh, yes. Please go to indivisible.org to sign up for our updates and to find your local Indivisible group.
And you put the greatest Facebook or pages or photos that people take. You know, we've got all these local reporters, you might say, and I have always loved looking through real quickly when I get the updates. I love to look at the pictures that people are posting, what's happening in their areas. I think that's just fabulous, and people are really on the march. So, again, Leah Greenberg, thank you so much for all you've done, and just keep it up and take care. Thank you so much for giving
thank
us
you.
This time. Take care. Bye-bye. And you are listening to WMNF Tampa, Sarasota, Clearwater Community Conscious Radio. Wasn't she fun?
So great.
Yeah. And so, okay.
And we've had several calls about rallies this afternoon at 5 o'clock.
Oh, great.
In Manatee County at 425 Cortez Road in Bradenton. here in Tampa, it is, in Curtis Hickson Park. And that's at 5 o'clock today. That's basically downtown Tampa. Land O'Lakes has a rally that will also be, if you go to moveon.org, you can put in your zip code and find a rally near you. You want to give one?
I have some information on St. Petersburg. It will be at 5 o'clock in South Straub Park in St. Pete.
Okay, it's really, really important. You heard Leah talking about this is happening, people, right now. Okay, I'm going to put this music back on because we want to bring in Tess Martin from Brevard, and then we're going to be talking to both Lisa and Tess about just what happened in Florida and their aspirations for the future and all those kind of good things. So let's put this music on. Make it a better world, people. You're the only ones who can. We have Tess Martin with us on the phone, and Tess is part of Speak Out Brevard. And so, Tess, welcome so much to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Well, we have your colleague, Lisa Perry, here, and she's been part. We just had Leah Greenberg, one of the co-founders of Indivisible. And so, tell us, Tess, Speak Out Brevard. Tell us a little bit about Speak Out Brevard.
Well, we started. A group of us started that group after the 2016 election upset. We all kind of wondered what we could do, and we decided that the best part, it started kind of as a support group, just of all of us who were just, we deep despair, and we realized we needed to get involved locally. And we actually followed the Indivisible Guide kind of step by step to set up our group. And we ended up, we formed a C4 organization that we just got people energized, motivated, organized, and worked really hard closely with our local Democratic Party to just get folks involved and give them something to do kind of with all of this despair, rage, momentum. And so that's kind of what we were doing over here in Brevard, just really organizing for the first time for many of us. And it was just very powerful, and a lot of those people are still involved
today. So when Lisa mentioned that she was going to be on with the founders of Indivisible, I kind of had a fangirl moment because I was like, wow, they are the ones who inspired us and really helped us get organized over here in Brevard.
Well, you know, Tess, it's amazing, but you find historically throughout history, you will find that there are different merges that come together at a time when the conditions are such that they really are upsetting so many people at the most basic level that you will find that these things rise. And that Women's March, the day after, you know, the inauguration, and you saw the millions, you saw the energy, you saw the signs, but also Indivisible. I remember I had them way back when they first got on, and I thought, this is the best thing I have heard, you know, and I downloaded their manual, and I thought, this is what we need, because Americans, you know, kind of, we thought our leaders would do it for us, and I think there was an attitude that some leaders, you know, kind of wanted to say, look, we'll take care of you, just, you know, you just do your thing, and vote for us when we need you, and then we'll just go on our way. And I think that merged came together out of real necessity, and to me, even though, you know, here in Florida, we might be a little discouraged what happened, I mean, the movement is there, and it's going to grow. And I think, really, it's a very exciting time. Don't you, and Lisa, don't you think that this is a great time, really, to fight for our democracy?
I fully agree. I think we've had so much buy-in from folks who, like you said, just kind of thought, hey, all we need to do is vote. As long as we vote, things will kind of work out in the end the way that they should, just the belief and a sense of fairness. And just, you know, dignity and our American values. And we realized, hey, that doesn't just happen if we don't hold our elected officials responsible, and we don't make sure that there's transparency in government and that we're getting good people elected. I think that's key. We kind of just thought, hey, we'll show up on election day and whoever's on the ballot, we'll just, you know, make sure to vote for the best one. But it's like, no, if you get involved in the process way earlier, to make sure you're educated about things like, you know, we went in at the CRC hearings for the amendments that were going to eventually end up on the ballot in Florida. It's like how huge all of those are. A lot of us worked really hard on Amendment 4, getting those petitions gathered, and to see that pass. I mean, I know we had some tough losses the other night, although it seems like some of that may still be in play, but Amendment 4 passing was incredible. Just the momentum and the amount of petitions that were signed, it just shot way past kind of what we want. And that's all of these people who got organized and involved and interested in what was going on around them. So I think that's a huge victory, and it's just the beginning.
You know, Tess, I couldn't agree with you more. I think Amendment 4 is a game changer in so many ways. Coming out, you know, of slavery and the Civil War oppression, and for Florida to rise up and, you know, vote that, yes, for felons to get their rights. To me, you know, that you lose a lot of battles before you win the war. And to me, that was a war-winning move. And so I couldn't agree more. And I also was really excited about Amendment 9. You know, I mean, with the environmental challenges we have, to me, that was a very strong statement. But I'm really curious, both Lisa and Tess, because it's really important to me, because you people like Underwood in Illinois, who won the congressional seat that no one thought she possibly had a chance for, she really got out there in the cornfields of Illinois, etc. And you people here, both you and Lisa, were really out. You were talking to people. And what were the most important issues that you really found that people's lives really needed? Healthcare, education. Tell us, what did you really found when you knocked on those doors and talked to people? Tess, are you there?
Oh, yeah. I didn't know if Lisa was going to jump in. I found healthcare was huge. People were really concerned, just the constant attacks. You know, and that's the thing, is like when people got more involved and they started kind of paying attention to what are our representatives doing in Washington, like, and in Tallahassee? And they realize, wow, you're trying to take away the Affordable Care Act, which is protecting folks with pre-existing conditions and is making sure that kids can stay on their parents' policy till they're 26. And, you know, all of these things that we just kind of took for granted. And so they realize, and even still, there's rising costs with health care, and there's a lot that needs to be fixed with the ACA. But overall, people are happy with the opportunities that the ACA has provided them, and they just want to see it become better. But being stripped of their health care, it scared a lot of people. So I found that was huge. And the environment was huge. I mean, we had red tide on both coasts, which never happened before. And then the toxic algae blooms, and it just seemed like everything is kind of going wrong at once. And I don't think that was the case. I think it's just we're all so much more aware of what's going on, which I find to be fantastic. You know, an informed electorate is going to make sure that good people get elected to office, and more people were willing to step up and run for office who weren't before. So I'm hoping, but yeah, healthcare, to get back to your original question, I think was huge, mentioned by everyone.
Yeah, and to me, I think a huge issue in this state is Medicaid. What's going to happen to it? And, you know, so some of the changes they're proposing, et cetera. And in the states, that three states, you know, that was on the ballot and it overwhelmingly was approved. And also, you know, minimum wage. And I think that it's really interesting because, if anything, there is actually more support for the importance of Medicaid, even than the Affordable Care Act. And so people are really aware that if you don't have good health, you have nothing. In other words, if you're not healthy, you've got a very compromised life. And to me, that's huge. And Lisa, what did you find? Because I knew you've been, I know you're sitting over there exhausted, really, from all the efforts you have done for, imagine, the last 6 months. Did you find that healthcare is huge?
I absolutely think healthcare was the top issue out there, but I would also add that the safety of our children with gun reform in Florida has been a huge player in the games as well. I know that a lot of people, and again, you know, a shooting in California last night, we really need to pay attention to making our schools our places of worship, just even going to the movie theaters or a yoga studio, safe spaces. So I think that that has really driven a force, as well as the March for Our Lives kids, and that whole movement has really started to wake up a different base than just the individuals concerned with healthcare. So I think I would add that I think there's been a lot of support from people that really got moved after Parkland and got involved around February and just started rolling up their sleeves and doing the work.
And so I'm curious, because I know Women's March is already planning, you know, their next big march in January. And so where are you going from here? I mean, I know it's probably not fair because I know people work so hard and you're all pretty tired and exhausted. But I think there are just Amendment of Four, really, I think really is such a game changer. And so and reflects, I think, so much the deep attitude of the people here in Florida. They can forget whether they're Democrat or Republican, but at the bottom line, they think this is fair. You know, if you paid your debt to society, you deserve, you know, to be part of society. And so where do you go from here? Tess, what do you have in mind?
Well, as you said, we, you know, the election day was just a couple days ago, so those of us who've kind of been hustling on that for the last 18 months were kind of just like, definitely going to relax for a little bit. I see that, but if I got an opportunity later today, I would probably take it. But really, I'm since we worked so hard here with our local chapter of the ACLU on getting the petitions for Amendment 4 and then educating folks on Amendment 4 once it was actually added to the ballot, and to see that pass, I think I would love to be part of an effort. I actually had the honor of we hosted an event in Brevard with our ACLU chapter that had Desmond Mead and Howard Simon from the ACLU. And I talked to both of them and said, hey, I want to be part of whoever is going to take the lead on registering these folks who now have the right to vote again, just to kind of register them and make sure that they know, you know, here's where you go to vote and here's when you can vote and just make sure that voter education happens. I think that could be really powerful. And I think Desmond Mead's organization, he said that that's what they would switch to. I mean, they've spent so many years trying to get Amendment 4 passed. So I think that would be an amazing thing to do, or whatever sets up infrastructure in Florida to make sure that we're out there talking to voters and just informing them and getting them ready and building coalitions. There's so much work that can be done, and I want to be part of that effort.
Tess, you mentioned something that I really want to know, the history of how Amendment 4 got on that ballot. And so you just mentioned that. Could you give us a little, just a real brief history of how that happened? How many years were they in the making? And give us a sense of it.
Well, I know Desmond Mead's organization and the Say Yes to Second Chances folks, they've been working on this, and the ACLU, they've been working on this for a number of years. This has been... They had a ballot they did the ballot initiative before, trying to collect a petition, I believe in 2014, and that did not, it was not successful. It didn't make it. They did not collect enough petitions. And I think the combination of their work laying the groundwork for years in Florida, raising the money, getting out there, getting organizers, you know, before 2016, and then when you had this influx of people, look, I'm going to be honest, before I got involved in 2016, I was not aware that prior felons were stripped of their right to vote essentially forever. I had no idea. And, you know, that and I voted every time that I could since I was 18. So I'm a very active voter, but I had no idea. So just the amount of education, I spoke to people every day who had no idea. And so just the groundwork and the infrastructure that they put in place when they suddenly had an influx of volunteers, all of a sudden, you know, they were ready to go. And so even though for them, I'm sure it felt like thankless, tired, you know, work that was exhausting, but thank God they were there doing that for this many years. And people were shocked to learn that this is a remnant of Jim Crow here in Florida. And the fact that we were able to overturn that, I just think it is so powerful. And even though, you know, not everything went the way that we wanted on Election Day, this is such a critical, you know, like you said, it's a game changer. It changes everything to add. Even if we just, even 20% of these folks, if they register to vote, can change everything in Florida where elections are won by a point or less.
And again, you're listening to WMNF Tampa, and you've just heard Tess Martin. She's with Speak Out Brevard. And Lisa Perry also is here. I know she's also part of Women's March, Pinellas, actually. And what are your other titles, Lisa? Because I know you've got that. I know you wear so many hats, but that's the biggest one I always call on you for.
And I still stand with my Women's March Pinellas hat. I have started working with other groups, such as the Indivisible FL13. In Pinellas, and along with some of the campaign work that I've been doing, but I would just stay with my Women's March hat. And one thing I would like to add with what Tess said, along with getting the amendment for voters registered, is that we need to continue to create community stakeholders, because one thing is in all of this movement, all of this activism, sometimes we overlook our just community members who are not engaged. And I think that there's a lot of work to do to get out there and give people a reason to get involved, to believe that this is their movement too. And so moving forward, I don't know what the title that is going to be, but I want to be part of that. I want to get out there into neighborhoods and start talking to everyday folks that are living their lives and just starting to really convince them that they are part of this as well.
And Tess and Lisa, I'm very worried. I've been worried actually for years. This isn't anything new, about election fraud, not voter fraud. But I'm worried about the voter suppression. And I think very obviously now that it's pretty apparent that the Republicans have rigged the system, whether it's the gerrymandering or the efforts to make, voter legitimacy, so to speak, such a difficult issue with voter ID and all of that. But I'm also literally worried about literally the structure, the machines, the counting of the ballots. And I'm not the only one who is so concerned. And to me, if we're going to have a democracy, because we have so many people now that said that they really don't totally trust that their vote counts. And there are too many instances of people who have thought they sent in a ballot and it wasn't received and all of this kind of stuff. And so I'm afraid that really, I think it's reached the point that we absolutely have to take some measures to have this done by a neutral, non-political party. And we really have to have guarantees. And to me, I want a paper ballot that is randomly audited, you know, and so that way they can't really know who's going to be checked or not, because there are just way too many places. And if you look at the really razor-thin elections we've had in this state, you know, that, and I was looking at the returns, and I realized in my own mind when I was watching, you know, the comparisons that, Hillary Clinton or whatever carried this by this much. And I'm quite aware that just with a simple algorithm, all you've got to do is change just a very small percentages of votes that you've never noticed. And there are so many ways you can do it. And just the fact that one like me, and I'm not the only one, is looking at the ways that this election could be skewered and rigged, I mean, I think that if we want to have a democracy, we have to address this problem. What do you think?
I totally agree with you, and I think that we saw a lot of issues rise up on Tuesday as the day was going on and people were going out to the polls. I was hearing, you know, stories after stories about people being told that they had already voted, and that's why it's so important moving forward to really fight for a system that we can ensure is not rigged. And I would just encourage anyone today that had an issue on Tuesday with their ballots, if they cast a provisional ballot, please contact your supervisor of elections, as well as just making sure that moving forward, when you go to vote, you have your ID, you know every your polling place. This is why we vote early. This is why vote by mail is so important. And I think that you know, we have to work on an activism level to fight for a system that ensures fair voting. And we also have to go back to what just happened on Tuesday and make sure that voters, if you had any issues voting, please contact your supervisor of elections and make sure your ballot was counted.
And there's also, you can do that to check to make sure they received and counted your vote by mail ballot. Yep. I know of at least one person whose vote by mail ballot quotes didn't get there, and so she was working on probably having to cast a provisional ballot. And we've also had a question from someone: what is a provisional ballot?
And a provisional ballot is if you showed up at a poll and you didn't have the proper ID, or say an address change or something of that nature, if there was anything wrong with your ballot, then you can cast what is called a provisional ballot. And those ballots are not counted until after the election is over, and in this case where it is so close. So if and a lot of the vote-by-mail ballots, all of this has to be done by 5 p.m. today. So if there was any question whatsoever, check. You can go to Hillsboro Supervisor of Elections. You can go to Pinellas, votepinellas.com, and just check on the status of your vote-by-mail, as well as if you went to the poll and for any reason were turned away, several folks were at the wrong polling locations, things of that nature. So provisional ballots are, you cast a ballot, but there was something that was incorrect with whether it came to your ID or whether you were at the right location or your signature didn't match your driver's license, things of that nature. So that's what a provisional ballot is. And if you cast one, please contact your supervisor of elections by 5 p.m. today.
And Tess, I'm looking at the time and we've just about run out of time. So any kind of comments that we didn't cover that you particularly wanted to mention?
Well, I just want to emphasize to folks that the election cycle, and when we're all working on campaigns and everything else, that's not the only vital work. There's so much work that can be done between cycles. There's so much work that can be done with your local Democratic Party, with your local groups, the ACLU. You can always be registering voters and doing that outreach and making those relationships so that when it does come time to vote or work for a candidate that you believe in, you have those relationships in place. The work never ends. So take the time that you need to rest, but get back out there. It's so important that we all stay engaged and involved.
And they still need help with taking care of those provisional ballots. Where do they go in St. Pete?
In St. Pete, it is 5100 First Avenue North, and I'm being told, even as we've been talking over this past hour, that they are at capacity but could use drivers. So their capacity with making calls and notaries, but if you are willing to drive to people's houses to get them to sign affidavits that they cast a provisional ballot, they could use you. 5100 First Avenue North in St. Petersburg, Florida.
And in Manatee, it's at 425 Cortez Road, and they particularly need...
need what?
All of a sudden, I've lost my...
They need drivers?
They need drivers, but they also
notaries.
Need... Notaries. Notaries, I'm sorry.
No worries.
Lost my brain for a minute. and so if you can help them in any way, that's 425 Cortez Road in Bradenton. And
I've been told that Hillsboro is at capacity right now, which is a great sign.
That's terrific. Also, we've had calls about the protest at 5 o'clock today, and there are a number of sites in the area. Curtis Hickson Park here in Tampa, South Stroud Park in St. Petersburg, at the Unconditional Surrender Statue in Sarasota. Check it out on moveon.org, and that's protesting the firing of Sessions and what that might do to Mueller and the investigation. We want to save the investigation.
And you have been listening to WMNF Tampa, Sarasota, Clearwater Community Conscious Radio. Just keep it tuned to your all day, people.